Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics, one of those posts covering finance and property news with a distinctively Australian flavour. It's a Monday evening, and I have a rather smart Edwin with me. Hi, Edwin, how are you doing?
I'm doing fine, Martin. I'm actually in mourning. Chandler, the commissioner's just resigned. So I've taken a vow of celibacy. And also, I'm not going to shave my beard until they appoint a new commissioner that's as good as him.
So this is the building commissioner, right? The one that was highlighting all of the defects and all of the issues. And in fact, we featured him or some of his videos on the shows in recent months. But yeah, he's gone. He's resigned.
He's resigned, Martin.
Yeah, we're not quite sure why, are we?
Look, what do you do when you've got developers? He upset too many people. He upset too many parliamentarians, and he upset the too many people that feeds them, I guess. So, that's my take from what I've read, what I've been reading, what I've been told in the, on the streets, word on the streets. But word on the streets, Dusty tells me that word on the streets is they're going to appoint Habib. They're looking to appoint Habib as the next commissioner. And Habib from Parramatta, Yusuf's cousin.
Absolutely. Yes. And yes, you wonder whether the next person to be appointed will have a larger collection of brown paper bags, right?
Yeah, Aldi bags, recyclable, reusable, Martin. Stop thinking one-use bags. You got to recyclable. Hemp bags, preferably.
Yeah,
all those sort of funny bags or Louis Vuitton bags.
But it is just worth reflecting because Chandler did actually shine a spotlight on some very significant issues. I don't see a huge amount actually changed, though, I have to say.
Oh, look, he sends shivers down the spine of a lot of across a lot of areas, and I think people started becoming more aware as to what they should be doing, and it was really a precursor to what should be happening, and that is reform at a higher level to bring in greater governance around the building industry. And this was just a precursor, but obviously the developers and the builders couldn't hack it. And from what I'm told, a lot of potential off the plan buyers were just walking away. And obviously, there's a lot of background stuff. There's a lot of hearsay. Bottom line is, when these players out there, they've got a lot of money behind them. They've got a lot of power behind them, and right or wrong or good or evil, they use it, they wield it when they can, when they have to, and unfortunately, I guess he just figured, my knees are better left intact than not. So
yeah, absolutely. Well, I have to tell you that I was talking to someone the other day who's in one of these high-rise apartments in a complex that's still got defects. They're still trying to figure out how much to spend on those fixing the defects, and the fees are going up and up and up, the costs are going up and up and up, and they're talking about interest-free loans and things to try and help a number of the residents to cover the costs, but they're up for huge amounts of money, and all because the building was not built right in the first place.
I just met with one of our followers over the weekend, and she's telling me that in a small complex of 8 townhouses, they're looking at anywhere between 100 and 200,000 of works, because again, as what you say, the complex wasn't built properly in the first place, and they're going to have ongoing issues, I actually had the opportunity to have a quick squeeze as to the property and the development, and I said, look, this is the least of your worries. What you see on the surface is the least of the worries. It's what you don't see that should concern you, and the ongoing litigation and the ongoing issues. And what we have now with, and that's in a small development, right? But you've got the high-rise developments where, as we've been saying and we've been speaking about for many years now, where the majority, and I've been voicing it for a lot longer, is the, you know, for over a decade, have the majority of the buyers in these complexes are overseas investors. Now, if they fall behind in the strata levies, or they don't comply with the special levies that are gazetted, put down in the bylaws in order to do the rectification work, guess what? Chase me if you can is the phrase I use, because they're over in, the majority of them are over in China. So it's an ongoing issue. Litigation isn't cheap. So something that would otherwise would have cost them 3 years ago $100,000, $200,000 to rectify, now they're looking at upwards of $500,000. And then you've got to find these owners that are basically MIA, and the agents that act for these buyers here, they communicate with them through WeChat. I mean, it's just a myriad of, you know, ongoing issues, and we're not going to hear the end of it. As it's something that the commissioner was getting on top of it. I said it was the precursor to what was really meant to be happening, it's not. And unfortunately, what we're going to see is a lot of these developments that are not built properly and are halfway or three quarters of the way or nine tenths of the way, through the building phase, and are badly built, they're going to be given the occupation certificate. People are going to move it, and we're just going to hear the same story over the next, 5-10 years. Or it's just going to keep on rolling. Of course, he was certainly making a stand, and the powers that be, as I said, didn't like it, got ousted, and we're only going to move on. We're going to see greater, if I could use the word, carnage. It's a shit show out there, and it's only going to get worse. And neither government, the leaves or the labs, they don't want it fixed. I guess it's going to be more material for our ongoing rants, Martin.
Well, it's a good job we do it weekly. There's so much to cover off. And another issue we should just talk about briefly is Mr. Rooster.
New family, Jose Rooster, Martin. He's got his family's growing, as you can see, and his family's growing, and he noticed that he was featured in one of your podcasts over the weekend. The economic chickens and housing risks are coming home to roost. So he just wants to know, because of the current economic situation and inflation and the cost of living and the fact that he's now, inherited 10 new chickens. It's getting tough out there to feed the family, and he wants to know if he's going to be earning any royalties anytime soon.
Well, I tell you, you should be impressed. Somebody actually recognised the rooster from our other show. So they said, "Is that Edmund's rooster?" And I said, "Yeah, well, I just borrowed it."
Well, yeah, like he's looking for a side hustle, Martin. So who knows? He might be featured in a couple of movies soon. Now, I'm going to reach out to Elon Musk, and because Jose's telling me he wants to be the first rooster out in space. Never know.
Roosters in space? Yeah, no, that sounds like a good movie. I'd pay a few grains of corn to watch that.
Yeah, well, he's not into crypto or property. You know, he trades the futures on corn, wheat, and worms. So he'll be up for it. Yeah, talking about the added cost of living, Martin, we're just going to launch into our first article, and the real estate put out an interesting article, how, you know, fun is out as cost of living soars. They bring out different, in the surveys, they bring out the, you know, interesting ways and means that people are going to be looking at reducing the expenditure moving forward. But you and I have been talking about this for a while, and I know you and Tarek have been talking it for a while as well, and how things are just going to keep on, costs are going to keep on escalating. And tomorrow we've got the RBA, and some are calling a 75 point basis point rise, others are calling a 50. Are they going to go that far? I'm sort of edging that they might be below the 50, because don't forget, didn't the treasurer in Albo call Lowy in for a brief discussion a couple of weeks ago.
Well, that's right. I mean, Albo did say, don't go too hard, you know, too fast. But, of course, the Fed last week went 75 basis points. So, yeah, 50 is probably the one that's the safest bet, but it could go higher or lower, more to come. Although, interestingly, if you look at the forward 30-day view now, in fact, the trend in the curve is rates are not going to go up as high as people were saying previously, and they're coming down quicker. So interesting to see. And I'll just make a comment on the realestate.com article. It's very interesting. 22% of respondents said that they'd stopped going to restaurants.
Well, that's right, 22%, and it's and I think the other 78% are, you know, because they can't front the cost of the cost of living is increased. I'd say the other 78% are doing it because of the weekend surcharges. I don't know. I'm just putting it out there.
You and your surcharges.
But you know, the interesting thing, Martin, with this is we've got an industry that is just about, you know, it's on its knees. It's about to get its head chopped off. As rates keep on rising and the cost and inflation keeps on going up, and obviously because people are going to be choosing to keep the principal place of residence or hedge the principal place of residence against the onslaught that we're going to be facing. But in that, I was reading through the different percentages of the respondents in this survey, and only 9% are going to stop going to bars, given the fact that beers. Getting to about $15 a pint.
Wow. Okay. Well, that's pretty interesting. So, yeah, it just shows you where the centre of gravity is in the Australian economy, doesn't it?
And 10% said no more dinner dates.
Yeah.
So, look, at the end of the day, cost of living is...
It's a biggie. And it's interesting, again, in my surveys, I've now got nearly 20% of people who are saying they've changed their fundamental shopping habits. They've given up going to the normal supermarket. They've gone to a cheaper alternative, or they're shopping less, or they're going last thing in the evening to try and get bargains. I mean, there is a fundamental shift going on in terms of people's finances, and you know, my mortgage stress data, which hopefully will be featured in a few shows tomorrow around the place, was up again. So unfortunately, it's pretty pressurized. Although I have to say, Edwin, I think that some of those property owners in China would probably be even more pressurized, right? They're still striking on those mortgages, aren't they?
Oh, look, it's getting harder, harder and harder. And you've got the chatter. With the looming prospect of a skirmish. Is it going to be a skirmish? Is it going to be World War III? What we do know from the WeChat chatters over there, I can't show the footage of what I've been watching over the weekend, is that the skies over Xiamen is absolutely lit up at nighttime. The locals got told to stay indoors but enjoy the fireworks. These are live rounds, you know, being shot up in the sky. Basically, obviously, this is the, you know, one of the cities that fronts Taiwan, and this is on the news of Pelosi wanting to visit Taiwan, and the CCP basically saying, well, you come at your own peril, and if you play with fire, you'll get burnt. So. But in the meantime, they've been having these night shows, daily night shows over there, and where the skies are lit up to like the 4th of July, and the videos that I've been watching, I mean, it's better. Some of the footage, it's actually better than watching the end of year celebrations at the Harbour Martin. We're talking about, you know, live rounds of ammunition just lighting up the sky. It's incredible. But the question is, Martin, with that, let's say there was a war, whether it be, you know, on a small scale, large scale, you know, but let's say there was a war. The question is what will happen? Obviously, I'm always thinking, so what will happen to the properties, the property prices, what will happen to the market here? And, you know, I raised a few points there. And I thought we might have a quick few minute discussion over them. What do you think?
Yeah, good idea. And what's quite interesting is that we know that there's a lot of uncertainty, both over there and over here. Generally, you would assume that with greater uncertainty, listings will go down because people would be less willing to list their property because they don't want to sort of move. And if values drop, then of course they won't sell because they won't get significant price gains or equity if they did. I think you can pretty much write off the planned apartments in any case. I mean, they've already been pretty much written off, but even more so. And nothing that I've seen in recent times suggests other than that's going to continue. And so that would be amplified. Homeland package is an interesting one because, again, what we do know is that a lot of people are still waiting for those homeland package to be delivered, built, and of course, construction companies keep going out of business and the cost of materials keep rising. So I'm not sure that's one to bet. Buyers, what will they do? Well, I suspect they'll just retreat into their shell. They're already happening, so more of that. And as for the existing investment apartments, sell if you can, but good luck because you won't find a buyer.
Yeah, and let's not forget that, as we said earlier on, most of the properties that most of the investors in these high-rise developments are foreign investors, and a large portion of them are mainland Chinese-based investors, and so it's going to be carnage definitely for apartments. Off the plan apartments, they're just going to come to a halt, as it's already happening, regardless of on just the rumors and what's happened, from an economic standpoint, with no confidence in the construction industry. With regards to housing and land packages, I agree with you. That's going to be a wait and see as to when these things are going to get built, because obviously a lot of people still don't realize and don't understand that, although they can see the materials here, they don't realize how much of it was coming in. From overseas, the raw materials before it gets processed here in Australia, and you've got not only that, but we've got CSR, we've got Gyprock manufacturers here, but they're also reliant on raw materials that are coming in from abroad. So the supply chains is going to be decimated even more than what it already is. It's really going to be interesting moving forward. And as we're going to talk about numbers later on, we're now on the home stretch for the getting closer to the spring selling season. We're only about 4 or 5 weeks away from the spring selling season, and the numbers haven't gone down over winter. So it's really a recipe for carnage for vendors, and it's really going to be a smorgasbord of properties for buyers. But that is all depending on the home listing numbers staying on and trending upward as they have been, because if they retreat, then we go back to, and if we start going back closer to the 2021 figures, then that may be the soft landing that the government wants.
Well, I'll tell you something else today. The Bank of England just announced that they were cancelling the 3% mortgage assessment buffer that lenders in the UK had to make. So in other words, they were doing the calculation on a 3% higher than the mortgage rate. And they argued that that was no longer required because there were other measures in place. But of course, you can see that what they're trying to do is they're trying to get people to get back and go borrowing again, right? So I put a tweet out a little while ago saying, I wonder how much time it will be before APRA decides to remove that 3% buffer that we've got here in Australia too, and just throw a little bit more petrol in to see whether they can save the property market again.
Yeah, well, it's and then you've got rumours of all sorts of poxes and all sorts of means and ways of, look, with all the rumours of wars, with all the rumours of new variants and new pandemics, it's really about controlling the numbers. In my opinion, other than your economic analysis as well. But obviously, I gravitate a lot towards numbers on market and look at that for reasons of choice for our clients and what we can see and how better properties are being sold for a lot less than inferior properties got sold for three, four months ago, because of the pressure and a lot of and the focus with a lot of real estate agents, with 90-95% of real estate agents out there, is also the numbers, the signboards on on the streets, because that is reflective of a market that will deem a high price or a low price based on how many signboards up there. It comes back to choice as our main indicator. So yeah, look, it's going to be very interesting. I mean, the latest news that I read was that the Taiwan is out of although they're not saying that it's totally out, but it's definitely not going to be a port. But then again, why would you want to go to Taiwan? You're what? I think she's 83 years old. She's made 150 million in insider trading. Her husband trading in the stock market. And so you want to enjoy that, wouldn't you? You don't want to be shot down when you haven't spent 100 to 150 million.
That's a good point. And it's interesting because the local WeChat chats are a bit up in arms, aren't they, as well?
Well, look, see, on the back of that, on the back of that, and what's been happening with the potential confrontations there over Taiwan, they're basically saying, look, it's all in for the local WeChat chatterers from the groups that we've been monitoring, and because of the fact that these uncertainties, and they believe that not only that the housing numbers will retreat, getting closer to the end of the year, but they also believe that 2023 could be a monumental change in direction for the RBA, and they could even they're saying that they may even see rates drop in 2023, and again that will then have an impact. How great of an impact it will have will also be determined or dependent on how many homes on market. So they're focusing, and as I say over and over again to a lot of our clients, as well as to friends and our viewers on the ranch, look, you can, there are certain properties that you can buy now on a future price, on a future reduced price. In other words, agents are panicking, vendors are panicking, and we're making what some would consider silly offers, but look, if you don't ask, you don't get. In some of our what we would otherwise consider a silly offer, given the current market conditions, and taking into account a further 10% drop in some areas, in some areas we're offering 20% below what the mainstream are saying that will drop in certain areas, or what the agents themselves believe. But because of the panic and because things aren't moving, those messages, those numbers are being passed across to the vendors, which is what we want anyway, for that discussion to start, and then we come to a happy medium. And obviously there are the reasons why we look at buying property even in a downward market, predominantly because in a lot of the cases it's for principal places of residence. And we want to get it with an upside. The upside would be a future downward price that we can get it now, and people just want to be secure and not have the uncertainty as to where or how they're going to be living in 3-6 months' time if the proverbial keeps on hitting the fan and things get worse. So all these things come into play. But as for the WeChat chatters, that the local, they're mainly investors. So it's interesting to see that trend of investors starting to emerge. And let's not forget that these people are people that otherwise had invested in the share market, otherwise had invested in shops, and that they've since closed or sold or unsold the commercial. They had investments in apartments that got out 6-12 months ago, and as we've been sharing on the podcast, and they are cashed up. So and they basically money talks, BS walks.
Yeah, and it's the old talk about proactive vendors needing to meet the market if they want to sell. That's the official way of saying if you want to sell, you've got to take a hit.
That's right, Martin. And sometimes you can either be a hit with one of those rubber hammers that the doctor clips you on the knee. to check your reflexes, or you can hit you get hit with a sledgehammer. But they both get the message across.
Absolutely. Now let's talk about those numbers. You mentioned them earlier on, but we'll just put up the latest numbers. This is the 18,813 properties for sale in the Sydney region, and I noticed that apartments are still ahead of houses, but houses are still there, aren't they? This is a big list.
Oh, look, they are. They're still there, and if you notice from last week's numbers from the last rank, they're even higher for the start of the week. And as I said earlier on, we're only about 4 or 5 weeks away from the beginning of the spring selling season. I think the 31st of this month, the 30th of the month is the end of winter, and then we move into spring, and typically. This is when we start gearing up. But interesting, in comparison to last year's numbers for the same period, same week last year, the numbers on market now are almost double. Obviously, yes, we were in lockdown and everything. So this is why I keep on referring to those numbers, because the government, state and federal have to do something in order to pull these numbers back to a sensible figure, as opposed to allowing them to climb. And because if they climb above the 10,000, I mean, it's all over Red Rover. I mean, some of the analysts and some of the property economists and writers are already calling potentially anywhere between a 2.5 to a 4% drop in monthly prices across Sydney, albeit it's painting Sydney with one brush. But look, I can see that, and we can see that happening already in some parts of Sydney. Some parts are obviously still staying strong, and certain types of property are remaining strong as well. They're not losing value as much as some would like to think or would like to wish that they would. But it's just going to be, nevertheless, it's going to be potentially a trend that picks up speed. On a downward spiral, and could it's either a 747 with three engines coming down, or it's going to be the Led Zeppelin.
Yes, and one of these really important points is that the index for house price moves, which is the one that is often spoken about, is lagged by 6 to 8 weeks. Right, so it's not showing the current state. And we also know that in some areas, prices have actually started to move down quite smartly. There are places where they're 15% down or more. There are others where there's almost no move down. And it does depend also on the type of property as well. But I still see fundamentally high-rise investment properties continue to crash. And my old favourite, North Ryde, continues to go down and down dramatically. And I've got a couple of people now in that area tearing their hair out because they just sort of cut their price to try and actually get somebody to buy, and then the prices fall again and they have to cut again, and it's sort of vicious downward cycle. And now they're in the point now, if they sold now, they would actually be in negative equity. So it really is very tricky for some of those property investors who bought the wrong type of property at the wrong point in the cycle.
Yeah, they followed a lot of emotion rather than following logic and reason. And they started following our rents too late in the year.
Yeah, exactly right. Should have watched us sooner, folks. Should have watched us sooner. And we'll just touch on the auctions just while we finish the numbers, because the auctions, well, there's still some there, but the clearance rates are still very, very low, aren't they?
Look, they are. They're very, very low. But if you take note, the amount of properties on market from 2021 that went to auction, I think was just over 600. Mm. 577. For same time last year, and right now we double the amount of properties we are on market in terms of on market. We've got 506. Predominantly, it's freestanding homes that go to auction. Yep. So we've got 506. So it's a lot lower. So the confidence isn't there much. Mm. One of the best indicators of the fact that the confidence, if anything, we should be closer to 1,000, given the amount of properties on it. But we know what the mainstream media have been saying. We know what people are paying a little bit closer attention. And because they're working from home, they can spend a little bit more time educating themselves and listen to other podcasts like DFA and Walk the World. And so forth, as opposed to listening to Channel 7 and Channel 9 and reading the AFR.
Yep.
So you know, they've been you know, getting well educated, and this is the reason. This is why now the real estate industry, we are, in my opinion, we are at the this time like we are where we were in 2019 with regards to revenues coming into real estate industries, because the industry out there, what I'm hearing from just about every licensee that I speak to, from our contacts, is they're bracing basically for less income to come into, less income revenue to come into the office, which means that they're going to have to let people go. And not only that, but also with the unions, they've got to get the ship in order, and it's going to be added cost. So look, if the government doesn't come in with a new stimulus for small businesses, which will also incorporate the real estate industry, my position is back to where I was in 2019, where we could really see anywhere perhaps upwards of 40% of offices closing down. There's about 8,700 offices in New South Wales, and there's about 27,000 real estate agents operating in Sydney alone. So yeah, we could have a retraction in those figures by anywhere up to 30 to 40% likely. So it's going to put a lot of, potentially a lot more properties on the market as well, because as industries close down, as industries get hampered with rising costs, well, you get the holiday homes that start being put up for sale. If they're not, people start doing this in order to protect the principal place of residence. You got your holiday getaways that get put up for sale first, and you got your investment properties, again, in order to try and protect your principal place of residence. So, but with that comes more listings on market.
Absolutely. More listings on market, i.e. lower prices.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
Now, here we are. Da-da-da-da. What's wackier than a conspiracy theory, Edwin? We've got a good one this week, haven't we?
Yes, what's wackier than a conspiracy theory? Well, the wacky thing is that what's wackier is the fact that when agents don't believe their own bullshit, their own bull dust. You have to edit that out. So this is when selling agents don't believe their own, the spin that they told their vendors when they're taking a property to market. This is one of our followers, one of our listeners sent me this, story. Basically writes, he went out to look at a property, and the agent was guiding 2.5 to 2.8, and then he writes, because he had a long chat with the agent, he says he knows it isn't realistic, but I think the owners are greedy and think it's worth more than it is. So, he really trashes it, because this follower of ours, he follows our rants, and he does get to know the agents as he's going out there, and from time to time he engages me to help him look over a property that him and his wife are interested in, and we sit down and we have a general chat over a coffee and discuss plans and I'll just help him out with putting together the offers with the agents. So it's interesting. So following that, you just have to read. You just have to read the conversation, and it's funny because that ain't, agents don't believe it. But the bigger question there is, man, the wacky thing is you got to ask yourself the question: why did they take on the listings in the first place?
Mm. No, it's a great question. If they know that it's priced at the wrong point and it's not going to work, that's just effort for no reason, right? It doesn't make a lot of sense, does it?
Well, it doesn't to the average punter or somebody that's not in the industry. It doesn't make a lot of sense. But if you're in the industry, it's crystal clear for us. And one of the main reasons, Martin, is the fact that when somebody wants to take the property to market at a higher price than what you believe and what you've instructed the owner that the property is worth, but they want to chance it. If they want to do that, guess what? The marketing fee is increased, because the agents say to themselves, "Well, I don't want to work for free," because effectively that's what you're more or less going to be doing if you don't get the sale, because you don't get paid until the property's sold, and that's how you earn your commission. So the other way that they earn a fee on the way through is by charging a very high or hefty marketing campaign. In other words, it's an inflated marketing campaign. It teeters on being illegal. It's definitely not kosher in terms of ethics. But look, that's what they do in order to go and market. So I would say out of that marketing fee that they get slammed, the agents would still take like 50%. Now, when you're thinking about, you know, some people saying marketing fee, they'll probably come across marketing fees in their, you know, in their travels of, yeah, $3,000-$4,000. In these areas that we operate in, a lot of areas that we operate in, marketing fees can be upwards of $10,000, $15,000, $20,000, $25,000. Not much more that I could basically cut down to one quarter of that if you don't include the staging, because that's a separate thing altogether. But this is what happened. So the agents are still being fed along in the process to chance or to basically get the feelers. But as the agent says, within 10 days, and the feedback that the agents are trained to give back to the owners is really to amplify the bad news and minimize the good news in order to get them to be realistic in their view. That's one of the reasons. The other one is that the agents are also, they're working on what they call a footprint, or they're working on a promotional footprint. The more signboards that people that are going around, or the neighborhood, walking the dogs in the neighborhood and so forth, driving around to the local shops in the neighborhood, the more signboards that they see, obviously then you've got a greater footprint in the a foothold in that neighborhood, and they're going to call you if they want you to sell their home. But it does have its downfall.
Yeah, absolutely. And I would have thought that there's a couple of interesting questions, right? I mean, if they're going to be generating a little bit of revenue for marketing, they can run around in circles and probably not make a huge amount. But also, if you've got your boards everywhere, isn't that creating another rather more negative view as well?
Well, it does, and that is the downfall on the on a downward trend, on a downward pricing trend, and this is where damned if you do, damned if you don't. But they do it because agents' share of that a small drink, is better than no drink at all, I guess. That's the view that they take. But the biggest downside, in my view, and others would that are not overshooting the mark, or they're not buying the listing, as we call it in the industry, would tell you is that the biggest downfall is for the property owner themselves. Yep. Because as you said with your clients, that you've been helping them to look at the general trends of the apartment pricing in North Ryde, you get the same scenario. They should have gone lower earlier. They should have met the market earlier rather than chasing a spiraling kamikaze nosedive into oblivion. And this is what happens. So you end up doing the as they say, they call it the Roman candle, as you're spiraling down into closer to that crash. So it's that's the biggest downfall for the owners, and some owners and some agents don't necessarily get that message across because they want something for their troubles. And the biggest downfall downside for the agent, Martin, is that in a downward trend, it's not the first agent that generally gets the commission. Yep. It's typically the second and the third agent. Yep. So all you've done is you've literally paved the way for your competitor to earn the biggest prize money. Yes, you might walk away with a few thousand dollars in your pocket for from a marketing fee, from a marketing gig or whatever, but you missed out on the $15,000-$20,000 on the other side for actually achieving the sale. And at the end of the day, regardless of how much you told the vendor not to go high, or how much if you weren't intuitive to get that message across, the vendor isn't that particular person isn't going to like you, and they're going to hate you. you will become the problem. So look, it's, you know, as I said, look, you know, some agents say damned if they do, damned if they don't. But it comes back to also the position that the industry as a business is going to be in, and people are going to be taking on this because it's, you know, because people just want to earn something. And a lot of agents, again, a lot of the industry, I would say 30% of the industry, the selling agents, perhaps even more, are on commission only. So you know, it's basically, you know, you eat what you eat what you kill, you eat what you shoot. But if you don't shoot anything, if you don't kill anything, you don't eat.
No, exactly right. Well, I can see from my surveys in the SME sector, a lot of real estate agents are really struggling with working capital costs, just trying to keep the business ticking over because they're not getting the sales and therefore the commissions. And it's beginning to get quite difficult. So you said earlier on that you're back to 2019. I agree. I'm certainly seeing a lot of people in those industries worrying about whether they can actually maintain their business. So I think the next 6 months will be quite interesting.
Look, definitely. And also for the industry, if you recall back then when we were doing the podcast, I was talking about knowing quite a number of officers that were on the second, if not the third or fourth credit card, just to keep the overheads, just to meet the overheads in order to keep the doors open, because the rent rolls weren't bringing in the incomes, because now we've done a 180 on the incomes that used to be made by the rent rolls, and everything got skewed, and everybody started chasing the high rolling sales commissions, and the rent rolls got left by the wayside. So it's interesting, and we're back there. We've done the 360, and now we're back to, you know, where we were before the government just pumped out all this stimulus to support all the small businesses. But the big question is now is, are they going to do it again, Martin?
Well, they all say they can't afford it. I think what we'll see, I think. Now, talking about things that we're ahead of the curve on, as we were with that subject, here's another one where we are ahead of the curve again, right? Because we were talking some time ago about all these land releases didn't happen, and now somebody else has written a report. I made a show about it. Land banking is part of the housing problem. That was out yesterday. It was quite a popular one. But we've been talking about this for some time, haven't we?
Look, we have. And, I mentioned that that there are a number of developers that have got anywhere upwards of 75,000 to 85,000 lots that have been gazetted, and they've just been feeding the market. And this is when people were starting getting all hysterical and going into the subdivisions and in 17 and 18. And it was interesting because back then I think Alan Jones. Alan Jones was bought this up. Strangely enough, I used to listen to 2GB at one stage, and when Alan Jones was on there, and he used to talk a fair bit about it as well. It was interesting. I sent him a few emails because I had his email address, and we used to touch base on email and just share some of these stats. And look, that's when I found out that there were some developers that were holding upwards of 70,000 lots that were already gazetted, and there's a lot more. And even back then, I don't know if you recall, Martin, when I brought up a couple of times this whole thing, that there was also lobbyists to yes. wanting to raise the dam yep. by 3 to 5 meters, because as soon as you raise the dam, then obviously the flat areas below the dam, they convert from 1 in 25 to 1 in 50, or 1 in 100 to 1 in 50 to 1 in 100, and therefore you're able to again subdivide the lands. And there's a lot of people that have been land banking, and they haven't just been doing it for the last 5 or 10 years. These are people that have been land banking for 30, 35, 40 years, Martin. These are families that have been in the land banking business for decades. And if these families, if these developers were to drop the value of the land as they feed it out onto the market, if they were to drop it by $200,000 per lot, they'd still be walking away with a fortune, because when they bought it for peanuts. They bought it for absolutely peanuts, for as they say, for nicks. And this is when the government was giving land away. This is when the brown paper bags were a lot bigger, and government departments and so forth were giving land. We're just handing land over to developers hand over fist. And now we've got the problem that you raise in your video, with how they've been manipulating and controlling the market as well by a constrictor or by drip feeding the land that onto the market.
Yeah, well, it's a very interesting read, that report, and what they showed, and they've done quite detailed research, that when prices were going up, they'd release land. When prices were dropping, they stopped releasing land. And their argument is, well, we're here to maximise profits for our shareholders, right? Not thinking about the consequences for those prospective purchasers who paid a lot more, $194,000 more than they should have. But this is another example of the power of a small number of very large developers, quite a large number of smaller ones too, but playing the same game, which is effectively holding off, not releasing land, and allowing the values to continue to rise. And it's one of the reasons why housing affordability is just so terrible.
Yeah, and look, in the cohorts in this, and they're complicit, are the local governments. Stay me, shoot me, do whatever you want. But they're the cohorts because
of course, the higher the cost, the bigger the fees.
Yeah, the bigger the fees, and the council contributions go. As I've been sharing in Holroyd, albeit high rise, it wasn't that long ago where council contributions, when you wanted to build medium density, let's say 45, 50, 60 units in those areas, before we got to that stage, the council contributions were anywhere between $4,000 and $6,000 per lot. Yeah, you'd be lucky to walk out of there with less than 45.
Yeah, absolutely.
And what do they do? And what is that? What's that? That's just to stamp a new piece of to create a new file online and to perhaps stamp a piece of paper.
It's a very expensive piece of paper, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it is. And obviously, yes, there are civil works that go in, but to compensate these developers, as we pointed out in our previous show, to compensate for that is the land lots. Historically, you can chase it from quarter acre blocks, and they were small blocks. In the 60s and 70s, but you could get quarter acre blocks. That was your typical subdivision, and then we went from that to 850, to 700, to 620, to 580. Then you've got your Jordan Springs and your Pemulwuy's and your Box Hills and that, Schofields, where they went down to 230.
The lots are getting smaller and smaller. Quality of construction also significantly deteriorating. The infrastructure around them, much narrower roads. And interestingly, Edwin, if I look at my stress, the mortgage stress data is horribly aligned to just these suburbs. So these high growth suburbs, these highly speculative areas, is where a lot of people bought in with big mortgages, very little wriggle room in terms of loan to value ratios, and now prices are falling. So, look at it whichever way you like, this is a real problem.
Yeah, and that's where you're going to see, that's where I believe you will be seeing your 30, 40% price drops. Others will slow down, and that's where you're going to see the spiraling downward trend. Like it's just going to get faster, and the drops are going to be more noticeable, because and also I guess in your surveys, mate, you probably worked out that a lot of these are your first home buyers.
And first generation migrants to Australia.
Yeah,
right.
Look, some areas. Were able to stave off falls, because of the particular demographics. But there are some demographics that just because of the the funny mortgages, and so forth. They got put together through communities or brokers that they just got enticed to get in there, and you'd find that the solicitor was of a particular ethnicity, the mortgage broker is a particular ethnicity, the real estate agents of a particular ethnicity, and the bank managers of a particular ethnicity, and this is where you get all this stress because of all the funny loans that got presented, accepted, and approved, and this is where you see the pain. And on top of that, there's no real infrastructure for anybody else to consider these areas as worthwhile moving into, even of an opportunity. Even if the price has dropped in some of these areas 30-40%, and I had a spare two bob to throw around, I wouldn't look at these areas twice. I wouldn't put anything on it because it's only going to get, as you said, the construction is poor. Only God knows how long it's going to, how long these dwellings are going to stay up if they don't fall into sinkholes and all sorts of other issues with the engineering works, the civil works that were badly done.
Okay. So, Edwin, I think just as we sort of think about this, there's nothing else which we want to talk about, and that is, there's been traditionally a lot of food grown in and around the outer suburban ring in Sydney, right? And that's where a lot of our food has come from. But with all of the troubles with the flooding and everything else and the demand for development, what we're starting to see now is less and less of this land actually being productively used. And in fact, here's a video just to make the point.
Again, there's more on the other side. And his production has been cut down in half. The cost of packaging has increased. His profit margin has decreased. And soon, even all this will be gone. And the food bowl of Sydney is disappearing. 5 acres at a time. His neighbours have already packed up and gone. 10 acres to the right, 7 acres to the left.
Yeah, and what you see in that video, Martin, you see how the cost to maintain the food bowl for Sydney in these areas close to a lot of subdivisions is become prohibitive. And therefore, it's easier for these people. Now, we bought this up a while ago with this is Billy's farm. And you know what? He's being offered $10 million for 5 acres for redevelopment. And he's at a point where he's making less because the big shops such as Woolworths and Coles are demanding to put higher demands on him to supply them with the green vegetables, but yet his margins have decreased. You've got issues that he can't get labor force to support his little business, and now you've got developers that are going to be, again, what you talked about, are going to be land banking and for future development because they're going to be making more money out of that. And now, so in general, the population is going to be paying a lot more in food and sustainability, and land bankers are going to be making a hell of a lot of money again in about 3, 4, 5 years. These lands are going to be drip feed into the market and they're going to make a fortune out of it.
Yeah, absolutely. So again, it just shows you how distorted the whole property and related things are, and the cost of food goes on going up, doesn't it? And I guess that takes us to our tip for the day. What do we do in response to this, Edwin?
Look, again, it's just something, that we've started to do, and a lot of other people, I'm sure, no doubt, are starting to do. Look, first and foremost, if beer's getting to $15 a pint, I suggest bring your own. I'm trying to work out how to make tequila. So we've got some of our followers out there that are into science, and they're going to help me out. But look, there's a lot of things that we're going to do. And look, costs to go out, as they said in the survey. I think you eat healthier when you cook at home anyway. But then comes the other question, Martin, is with the demands that are going to be placed on people for work and to bring it in, and the amount of side hustles that people are going to have to be doing in order to maintain the principal places of residence and to maintain the high school fees, are they going to have time? This whole world is just turned upside down. But look, as much as you can, make it at home, try to do it at home. But first and foremost, also, I guess one of the biggest things that you and I talk about, it's always good to drive home, Martin, is, because it's all about buying or selling property, it's a property rent, is do your own due diligence. Don't let the selling agent convince you that all the due diligence has been done before you buy, because you will save yourself the biggest headache. You will save you will save your relationship potentially. You will save a hell of a lot of money, not just hundreds of dollars or thousands of dollars, but perhaps tens, if not hundreds of thousands of dollars.
Yeah, and particularly that's true for homeland packages at the moment. I mean, I've seen so many where, in fact, there are huge, huge risks that people are walking into without reading the small print, right? And understanding that it's not just reading it, but it's understanding the implications of what's there. Questions like, if costs go up, who bears the costs? What happens if the builder falls over? All those sorts of things. There are so many questions that people need to ask themselves. So often they just get caught up in the moment and just don't do the due diligence. And then down the track, well, who takes the cost? The people who didn't do the work on the way in.
Yeah, and the powers to be, Martin, unfortunately, the powers to be, like we started the show, they get rid of people that are out there trying to bring back some sort of sanity into the property sector so people can have confidence in these high-rise developments, and they get shot down, they get pushed to the side. And it's something that you just got to be wary of, that the government, local, state, federal, these big players, they're not out there to help you. You got to help yourself, and to help yourself, don't give away your right to do something for yourself and to prepare yourself for the future. And look, that's all I can say for now. But again, unfortunately, I think August is going to be a very, very interesting month. Before we get into spring and into the spring selling season, it could be a lot more pain but there's definitely going to be a lot more pain if the numbers keep on climbing. If we go over the 10,000 for freestanding homes, well, that there's it's going to be a watch this space as to how far the property prices are going to drop unless the government does something, pulls a rabbit out of their hat.
Down, down, prices are down. I've heard that before. Edwin, thank you very much. Great to catch up with you once again and to just go through some of those critical principles. And I hope that people are listening and learning from some of our conversations. Certainly a lot of feedback that I get from our followers are that they've really made better decisions because they've listened to us. So that's a big tick from us in terms of what we're doing, because that's what we're trying to do, isn't it?
Definitely. And all the best, and stay safe, stay healthy, and the sun's out, and get on with your gardening, Martin. Yep. Keep on doing those, your veggie beds.
Gonna plant some more lettuces. See you later.